The frog in the window will sing for you. The frog in the window will smile for you with his straw hat and his cane. And you know that you will not be the same, 'cause the frog in the window will dance for you. He'll tap out the rhythm in his bright red shoes. And if you ask why this is done,
you are listening to In the Window with DJ Frogs on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting round the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives and more.
You must never do a tango with an Eskimo. No, 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 oh dear no. When a lady from Nebraska's at a party in Alaska, she must never do a tango with an Eskimo. You can do it with a Latin from Manila to Manhattan. You can do it with a gaucho in Brazil. But if once those Eskimos start to wiggle with their toeses, you can bet your life you're gonna get a chill. Brr, you can never do a tango with an Eskimo. No, 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 oh dear no. If you do, you'll get the breeze up and you'll end up with a freeze up. You must never do a tango with an Eskimo. No, 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 no. An Eskimo. No, 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 oh dear no. When a lady from Nebraska's at a party in Alaska, she must never do a tango with an Eskimo. You can do it with a sailor from Peru to Venezuela. You can do it with a Apaches in Paris. But if once an Eskimosy starts to cuddle up so cozy, you'll find your passion cooling, yes siree. Brr, you can never do a tango with an Eskimo. No, 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 oh dear no. If you do, you'll get the breeze up and you'll end up with a freeze up. You must never do a tango with an Eskimo. No, 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 oh no, 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 no. Never do a tango with an Eskimo. No, no, no.
That was Alma Cogan, billed as the girl with a smile in her voice, and never do a tango with an Eskimo. Now, I misheard a report on Tim Curry, who recently had a stroke, and I thought he was dead. And as a tribute, I thought I'd play some of his album, Read My Lips. Best known for Rocky Horror, I also liked his performance in Little Orph Nanny. So here are three tracks: Slow Gin, Wake Nicodemus, and Brontosaurus.
Standing in the rain, and I feel like I'm gonna cry. I'm so fucking lonely, and I ain't even high. I'm so fucking lonely, and I feel like I'm gonna die. I've been shot down over a stormy sea. Well, I swear that I'm drifting away. Just can't get a grip on me. Hell, I can't even try. I'm so fucking lonely, and I ain't even high. I hate to go home alone, but what else is new? I'm so fucking lonely.
what a box full of gold. And your last request, as you're laid to rest, neath the trunk of an old hollow tree, we'll be lost in the morn at the first break of dawn, when we hope for the great jubilee. Nicodemus was never a sport of the lash, though the poet had crossed his path. But there were none of his masters so bold or sinash but to face such a man in his wrath. While your free heart of kindness filled till the brim, just a case in a chain to command. And while you long for the morning, the sunset grows dim, it's the morning that now has such hand. Of the salt of the earth, or as bought on a bag full of gold. Any last request, and you're laid to rest, neath the trunk of an old hollow tree. We'll be lost in the morn, at the first break of dawn, when we are for the great we'll be right back.
She can do it loud. Well, she can really do the brontosaurus. But she can scream the heebie-jeebie chorus until you know what she's really got. Cause she can do it loud. Do it, do it, do it.
Okay, it's over to Uncle Buffo.
Here is the fifth in our series of Just William. With 39 collections of short stories, this series could go on for a long time. Richmond Crompton spent 49 years writing them, and here, read by Martin Jarvis, is William and the League of Perfect Love.
William's village was greatly relieved when it learnt that Mr. and Mrs. Bott were returning to the hall. The village was tired of the eccentricity of the Pennimans, who'd been renting the Botts' mansion, and it had looked forward to the return of normality in the person of the Botts. The Pennimans' mission to bring back the morning of the world had at first seemed gloriously funny. But it soon became generally agreed that the Pennimans were an unmitigated nuisance. Never had the Botts been so royally welcomed home. "I say, Botty," said Mrs. Bott to her husband, "they've never seemed so pleased to see us back before." But there had been some hitch in the Pennimans' arrangements, and they asked the Botts to allow them to stay one more night. That night had been a fatal one, for in the course of it, Mrs. Bott had discovered that Mrs. Pennimon was an honourable. Mrs. Bott had never met an honourable before, and insisted on addressing her as Mrs. Honourable Pennimon. Mr. Bott grew more and more gloomy. Titles went to his wife's head like champagne. The Pennimans were telling her all about their mission, and she was uttering little affected cries of, "Oh, how wonderful!" And then it turned out that the hitch had upset the Pennimans' immediate plans. "Oh, but Mrs. Honourable Penniman," cried Mrs. Bott, "you must stay here as long as ever you like." Mr. Bott fell back in his chair with a little moan. Then the Pennimans decided to form the League of Perfect Love, with Mrs. Penniman as president, Mrs. Bott as secretary, and Mr. Penniman as treasurer. Mrs. Penniman was on familiar terms with various other titles, and Mrs. Bott lived in a dream of rapture. Titles! Titles coming to the house every day, hobnobbing with her, as pally as pally. Meetings at the hall began again with renewed vigour, and everyone who could be bullied into it was enrolled in the League of Perfect Love. Its adherents swore not to take life in any form. "The smallest creature," said Mrs. Penniman, "has as much right to live as we have. The life of a slug," she said to the head gardener at the hall, "is as precious as yours." Mouse traps and rat traps were, of course, also forbidden. Most of the members of the League possessed pet dogs, pampered poms or peaks or griffins. Refreshments were always provided after the meetings, with dishes of creamed chicken for our little doggy brothers. One afternoon, William spotted Robert, his elder brother, entering the gates of the hall.
"I say," said William, "you've not joined that League of Perfect Loonies, have you? One of them told Ginger that woodlice had as much right to live as he had." "Woodlice! Crumbs!"
"I'm only going in," said Robert, "to get the lease for the sports field renewed." He spoke with an air of importance, as befitted the secretary of the local cricket and football clubs. The sports field was rented from the Botts and had been levelled and rolled till it was the pride of the neighbourhood.
"Well," said William, "tell me if they're doing anything funnier than usual."
While William was finishing his tea, Robert returned, pale and distraught.
"She won't renew it," he said wildly.
Mrs. Brown carefully broke off a strand of darning wool.
"Who won't renew what, dear?"
"Mrs. Bott won't renew the lease. Not unless we all join her beastly league and promise never to take life in any form. Not even a blasted mosquito."
"Hush, dear," said Mrs. Brown. "Are you quite sure she understood what you wanted?"
"Of course she did," exploded Robert. "She won't let us have the field. It's enough to turn anyone into a murderer. There they were all clacking away like a lot of batty hens, and their beastly little dogs guzzling a chicken. What are we going to do with cricket starting next month?"
Mrs. Brown stopped darning. She only did that in moments of deep emotion. "It does seem a shame," she said. The next afternoon, accompanied by his mongrel Jumble, William's wanderings led him to a farmyard, where a man and two boys were leaning over a stone enclosure. To William's delight, it was full of rats. The man explained it was the result of a ratting campaign on the farm buildings. He pointed to a fox terrier.
"Him's a champion ratter. Gonna be put in and timed."
William pointed to Jumble.
"So's he a champion ratter," he said airily.
The man looked critically at Jumble.
"All right," he said. "Give them 5 minutes each."
Overjoyed, William took off his coat and flung it carelessly on the side of the enclosure. Jumble soon got the hang of things and dealt destruction right and left like a small streak of lightning. The man looked at him appreciatively.
"Him's not a bad 'em, him ain't."
And William's heart swelled with pride. He retrieved his coat, and Superboy and Superdog swaggered along the road together. As they were passing the gate of the hall, a sudden thought arrested him. Robert and his sports field. He'd help poor Robert. He'd go in and he'd make the Botts let Robert have the field. A woman carrying a moth-eaten pom was just entering. That meant a meeting of the League was in progress. Right. If there was any chicken going, then Jumble, the world's champion ratter, should have his share. Yes, he'd endure the meeting, and then he'd tackle the Botts on the subject of Robert and the field. Mrs. Penniman stood at the front door, a bleary peak under her arm.
"What do you want, boy?" she said. "I've come to the meeting. Brought my dog along, too."
Mrs. Penniman looked at Jumble, then at William.
"My good boy," she said. "You can't come to a meeting in that state."
"Why not?" said William, simply. Mrs. Penniman was disconcerted. After all, why not? Could anyone be legally refused admittance to a public meeting because he was covered with mud and bits of grass and stick? She doubted it.
"Very well," she said, grudgingly.
William entered, the faithful Jumble at his heels.
"Oh, no, you can't take that dog in," said Mrs. Penniman.
Dogs, she was sure of.
"The other dogs have gone in," said William.
We couldn't possibly have a dirty, smelly dog like that in the room. You can tie him to the railing. William tied up the world champion ratter to the railing and entered the hall, grim and dogless. Mrs. Bott sat on the improvised platform in the drawing-room between a baronet's widow and a duchess's cousin. She was still intoxicated by the glory of high life. Mrs. Penniman glowered at William. "Need you come into the room in that dirty coat?" she said coldly. William took it off and threw it carelessly onto a chair by the door. The proceedings were opened by Mrs. Penniman, who showered compliments upon our charming hostess, Mrs. Bott, after which a knight of the garter got up to speak. His voice trembled with passion as he warmed to his theme.
"We have, ladies and gentlemen, a crying injustice to remedy. Some of our furred and feathered brothers have defenders in plenty. The horse has whole armies of champions. The dog," and he flashed a mouse-like smile at the moth-eaten Pom, "is surrounded on all sides by admirers and veterinary surgeons and so forth. The cat has whole societies devoted to its well-being. Even birds have sanctuaries and coconuts and whatnot given them everywhere."
William sat in a silent ferment of rage. Robert's sports field taken away from him. Jumble not even allowed to enter the house where the moth-eaten Poms would soon be guzzling on chicken. The voice went on.
"But I want to plead for those little defenceless brothers in our midst, who were daily ill-treated and even slaughtered. I am referring, ladies and gentlemen, to the gentle greenfly, the patient slug, the timid mouse, even our little brown brother, the rat. I say, ladies and gentlemen, that the wanton slaughter of these trusting little creatures is a disgrace upon our nation and our name. No food is spread for them, and yet when they try to take their share of sustenance from the ample bosom of our Mother Nature, what do? We murder them, ladies and gentlemen. If I had my way, everyone who subjected a living creature to such a fate should be made to suffer in the same way."
Feeble cheers from portions of the audience.
"And how harmless, how appealing are these little creatures whom we so ill-use. Even the rat, with his eager little eye, his brown furry coat, his..."
The speaker froze suddenly, staring at the coat that William had thrown over the chair near the door. From the pocket, a brown form was emerging. And another. They were the survivors of the rat hunt, who had considered discretion the better part of valour, and had taken refuge in the pockets of the coat. The expectant eyes of the audience gradually shifted to the object of the orator's stricken gaze. A third rat was just emerging. For one second, a paralysis of sheer horror held them. Then a rat scuttled across the room to the curtain. Another disappeared behind a bookcase. The third remained in the corner by the door, cutting off all escape. The members of the audience leapt upon chairs and sofas, gathering their skirts about them. The orator took refuge upon the grand piano. The Peaks, Poms, and Griffins fled beneath the sofa, whimpering with fright.
"Help!" screamed Mrs. Penniman from her precarious perch upon a fern stand. "Do something, somebody, quick!"
A gleam had come into William's eyes. He stood up. "All right," he said. "I got a dog outside what's a world champion ratter, and I'll fetch him in if you like." A rat scuttled across the room from the curtain to the fireplace.
"Fetch him in, quick!" moaned Mrs. Penniman.
The others screamed assent. William turned a basilisk eye upon Mrs. Bott.
"Will you promise to let Robert have the field?"
"Oh, yes," sobbed Mrs. Bott.
"Without joining your old league?"
"Yes."
"And to let Jumble have some chicken stuff, same as the other dogs?"
"Yes, yes."
William went to fetch Jumble, stepping carefully over the rat by the door. Jumble entered, and at once the room was a pandemonium of barking and growling and the smashing of ornaments and furniture. Then, out of chaos, emerged Jumble, proudly laying three carcasses at William's feet.
"Right, now I'll go and fetch Robert," said William, "and you can fix it up with him before you forget."
He returned a few minutes later, accompanied by a bewildered Robert.
"I can't explain exactly,"
panted William. "But they're going to let you have the field and go on killing things as much as you like." Inside the hall was bustle and activity. The titled folk had all gone. The Pennimans were going. The League of Perfect Love had automatically come to an end. No one, for miles around, would ever forget how the members had implored William to fetch in his dog to kill the rats. The car that was to take the Pennimans to the station was already at the door. Downstairs in the study, Mr. Bott faced Robert and William, beaming expansively.
"Yes," he said. "I'll sign it with pleasure, young man. I couldn't do it against Mrs. Bott's wishes, but that's all right now. She's lying down till dinner time, but she's her old self again." He picked up a document. "Here it is, young man. I sign here, and you sign here."
A few minutes later, Robert and William were walking down the drive, the agreement safe in Robert's pocket. Jumble trotted at their heels. Suddenly, William stopped. "Crumbs!" he said. "I forgot to ask for Jumble's chicken stuff." Then he looked down at Jumble. "Oh, well," he went on. "I don't think it matters. He's not really much of a chicken dog. He's more of a rat dog."
You're listening to DJ Frog's In the Window with Uncle Buffo's Comedy Spot on Spirit Plants Radio. Broadcasting round the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives and more.
Thank you, Uncle Buffo. And now, bless your grave, watching from the new album, The Flashing.
Oh,
Now, two tracks from Inform, Educate, Entertain by Public Service Broadcasting. Night Mail, followed by Spitfire.
Sorted, picked up or dropped during the night.
This is the night mail crossing the border. Bringing the check and the postal order. Letters for the rich, letters for the poor, the shop with the corner of the girl next door.
Fly a lot better than we do. See how they wheel and bank and glide? Perfect. And all in one. Wings, body, tail, all in one. Someday, I'm going to build a plane that can be just like a bird. Creating, is it? At least it's a curious sort of bird.
bird that breathes fire and spits out death and destruction. A spitfire bird.
What a strange little machine.
Can't see us spit in the air without getting a kick out of it.
Why, it is like a bird.
A spitfire bird. Tiring, always stretching up for something that's just out of reach. But I'll get it. After all, what I want isn't as easy as all that. I've got to do 400 miles an hour, turn on a sixpence, climb 10,000 feet in a few minutes, dive at 500 without the wings coming off, carry 8 machine guns.
Hello, Hunter Leader, Hunter Leader. There's its approaching Beachy from Southeast Angels 1-5. Over. Bandits are now about 3 to 4 miles south of Beachy. You should see them in a minute in the dark sun of you. Hello, Hunter Leader. Hunter Leader, Flapper Control calling. Can you see them? Can you see them?
Now we interrupt our regular broadcasting for an urgent appeal.
This is an urgent appeal for help. Are you thinking of giving financial support to a child living in poverty in the third world? Have you ever considered giving money to help people who don't even have clean water to drink or enough food to eat? Do you want to help provide medical treatment that could transform the quality of life of millions of people? Well, think again. In Britain today, thousands of useless domestic pets have a bit of a miserable time because of owners who, for whatever reason, cannot stand the sight of them anymore. For the money it costs to educate and inoculate a 7-year-old boy in Mozambique, this weird, panicky spaniel could spend the rest of his life in a hotel. For the price of a cataract operation, which would restore this Sudanese woman's sight, you could fund months of trawling up and down motorways looking for kittens. For the £3 a month that could equip an Ethiopian farmer with seeds and tools, you could provide a lifetime's doggy biscuits for this Labrador that wheezes itself every time it hears the Hoover. Please give what you can.
Next, a track from Gretchen Wilson's new Right on Time album, it's My Truck, and features Josh Malta.
Yeah.
it up for me. And
I can't keep your cooking down. My truck's bigger than your truck. You're soft, I feel so tough. My next show's up, not a team. My truck's bigger than your truck. My truck's fully lifted. Right now, down all 66 inches.
You can hang truck nuts off your hitch, but
my truck's bigger than your truck.
Max Prosser also has a new album called Rangoon, and here is his cover of Mr. Cohen's song, Hallelujah.
Es gab geheime Harmonien, die David spielte und dem Herrn gefielen. Doch du scherst dich nicht um Lyrik, tust du. Hier ist der Dreh, ein F in C und nun am Moll und dann das G. Der König ganz verblüfft, er schreibt sein Halleluja, 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 Halleluja. Glaubst, was suchst du den Beweis? Du saßt die Bahn und dir wird heiß, überwältigt von der Schönheit und dem Mondlicht. Sie hielt sich fest, ihr wart ein Paar, sie brach den Thron und sie schnitt dein Haar und aus dem Mund zog sie dein Halleluja. Halleluja. Vor seinem Thron, auf diesem Boden kroch ich schon, doch kam ich gut alleine klar, bevor ich dich sah. Du spieltest bloß dein Spiel der Stars, doch Love ist kein Parademarsch, Liebe ein zartes Halleluja, Halleluja. Langer Zeit, du warst da und war und Ewigkeit, doch ist der Himmel himmelweit. Sag, wo bist du? Es tat so gut, so tief in dir. Wir flogen hoch, waren Gottes Tier und aller Atem war Sinn. Halleluja, Halleluja. Liebe lehrte mich nur Spott, wie sie schüttet ihren Pott. Namaste. Doch du hörst kein Wimmern in der Nacht. Auch singt hier niemand, der's vollbracht. Ist ja nur sein altes und kaltes Halleluja. 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 Du sagst, dass ich vergeblich ruf, den Gott, den man sich einst erschuf. Oh, wenn's so wär, was macht's denn dir aus? Das Licht doch jedes Wort durchdringt, und wenn es wär, gebrochen singen, selbst heilig, bleibt es nur sein. Mein Bestes, viel war's nicht. Ich wollte spüren, also suchte ich dich. Und eines war ich sicher nicht: dies alles Lüge. Doch sogar dann, wenn nichts gelang, werd ich vom Gott der Lieder stehen und auf den Lippen nichts als Halleluja. Halleluja.
You know who I haven't played for a while? No, no, it's not Yoko Ono. It's Dusty. So here's Breakfast in Bed.
You've been crying, your face is a mess. Come in, baby, you can dry the tears on my dress. She's hurt you again, I can tell. Oh, I know that look so well. Don't be shy, you've been here before. Pull your shoes up, you don't.
And that's all for this show. If you have been, thanks for listening.